Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
So I suppose, Ruth, you're what used to be called DMARB happy. Are you familiar
DMARB
with
DMARB happy?
Are you familiar with the expression DMARB? You'll have to get a little bit closer.
Sorry,
yeah.
I'm DMARB happy.
Do you know what it means, DMARB happy?
No, not quite.
Well, it goes back to wartime, and when troops had done their service and they were demobilised, so they handed in their uniforms, got back their civilian clothes, they were DMARB happy.
I am wearing my civilian clothes rather than my uniform today.
I know, but the thing is, you've just finished exams.
Well, yeah, not real exams, mock exams.
Mock exams,
yeah. So I've had 3 2.5-hour exams.
And they're all over, and now you're starting the weekend, really. The weekend starts here.
The weekend starts here, the weekends come early.
It's very rare that we get a joke from one of our customers that we can use. Peter Hassett sends me a lot of unsuitable jokes on email, but I can use them in other circumstances. But he has sent one that's rather suitable for checking levels. A little boy heard a knock at the door and opened it. He shouted back to his dad, "Dad, Dad, there's a man at the door with a bill." And his dad said, "Don't be silly, it must be a duck with a hat on." That's what you call old school. Old school. Do you want a slightly newer joke? This is one from a guy called Matt Rees. He said, "I'm no good at talking to women. I just can't talk to women. I'm 28, and recently my grandmother and I had the 'Are you gay?' conversation. Turns out she isn't." All right?
It's okay. Well, it's good enough.
Is it good enough
for
testing? It's good enough for levels, yeah?
You shouldn't say we're testing levels now. We are testing levels, but you shouldn't say it. And then it should just be like, it's casual and, oh, we're just listening in on someone's conversation. You shouldn't be saying, right, so we're testing levels now with this joke.
There you are. And I thought I was a professional. So these exams that have just finished, I know I was helping you out with some of your Russian studies.
My Russian history, yeah.
Russian history. So we know about the Tsarist era, where everything was pretty bad for the serfs and the peasants. Then in came the communists. See, you've got the great advantage that I didn't know, because I didn't study Russian history at school. So but when I was your age, I was still a communist. But you've seen from your studies of history...
Not many people are communists now, anyway. Seriously.
No,
do you know what I mean? Like, people in your day, when the Iron Curtain fell yet?
No, the Iron Curtain was still firmly in place.
People didn't know what had happened under Stalin, especially. People would still be, like, communists and stuff. But people are not really like that now, just because we know what...
I think, yeah.
That Stalin massacred, well, a lot of people. But as we were doing the revision card, so Dad was like asking me questions, whatever, how many times did you compare Stalin to Jeremy Corbyn?
Well, I mean, obviously, Corbyn's probably a perfectly okay guy, which Stalin obviously clearly wasn't. There was an element of the psychopath in Stalin, which probably isn't there in Jeremy Corbyn. But what I'm saying is, when we were going through the revision, you know, going back to, say, 1900, 1905, 1906, all that, before, when they were organising it, and what happened in terms of the organisation of
Stalin
socialists.
Had nothing to do with it in 1905. You've clearly not been paying attention to our revision.
No, I know he didn't. What I'm saying is, the comparisons with Jeremy Corbyn were comparisons with what's happening within sort of little Labour Party groups.
You mean like the split of the Social Democrats into the Bolsheviks and the Mensheviks and stuff?
Yeah, yeah. It was all the splits. You know, they're Leninist Marxist. Oh, no, I'm a Trotskyist. You know, a bit like in the Monty Python film, which I know Monty Python references aren't your...
I don't like Monty Python. I don't find it very funny.
You've not really watched much of it.
Because I don't find it very funny.
On what are you basing that?
The bits that I've seen.
Yeah. Well, some of the bits of the TV show, I mean, the TV show was very, very variable. It was very patchy. Great in the day because there was nothing like it. But you should see Monty Python and the Holy Grail. That is the height of what they did.
Maybe. We'll
Maybe
see.
You've probably seen little bits of Life of Brian, have you?
No, I don't think so.
It wasn't as good as the Holy Grail. So you should. But the Monty Python in, well, actually in Life of Brian, they did a great thing about splitting the Judean Popular People's Front.
I thought we could talk a bit about Manchester Pride event.
Oh, yeah.
So Pride, I don't know how long Pride's been going for, maybe
20 years, I'm
25
guessing.
Years or something
maybe
like that.
Something like
I
that.
Think, yeah. Anyway.
They had carnival in Brazil's been going for years and years, and it was sort of like...
It's not the same thing at all, though.
No,
but, well, this is the idea. So it's like kind of what is Pride now, because it used to be a protest and it was people marching about the rights of LGBT people. And now
well, it was just gay people. It wasn't anything to do with LGBT.
Well,
LGBT hadn't been invented when
Pride
started.
So it was just gay people and lesbians as well?
Yeah.
I think,
Yeah, it was.
Just lesbians and gay people. That was before we had such a spectrum of different sexualities and when people thought that sexuality was more rigidly set. But that's not what we're getting into. So Manchester Pride this year has have got Ariana Grande to sing at the Pride Live, it's called, the Pride event or whatever. And tickets have been priced at £70, which is obviously absolutely ridiculous because it's meant to be a Pride event. It's based on a protest and it's based on...
No, but if you went to see Ariana Grande in concert,
no, but
it
shouldn't.
Pounds,
but the idea that Pride shouldn't be about that, it shouldn't even really be a paying event, it should be free. Like Britney Spears is headlining Brighton Pride and that's free. Also, Ariana, she's had a lot of backlash about it because Ariana Grande is not LGBT. And she, it's kind of, a lot
well,
of people
no,
are saying
Britney,
that it's...
Britney Spears,
no,
she?
But at least it's free for Britney Spears. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think that there's less.
And well, I think Pride itself has been a commercial event for
yeah,
years.
But
you know, sponsors.
It has been,
and, yeah.
And it has been commercial, but people have really kicked off about it this year to do with the Manchester one because of the, like, extortionate prices of the tickets. It's not just sponsors. And so someone tweeted, F Manchester Pride at this point, and everyone going, people in the LGBT community shouldn't have to have disposable income to attend a protest for their rights. It's disgusting exploitation of LGBT people. And after all this backlash, Ariana Grande said that she was like grateful and excited about the opportunity and blah blah blah. But still, it is really, I think it's really not on. I think there's a certain amount of, I think there's a certain amount of commercialisation that has already happened, but I think that this Manchester one has taken it almost too far.
So it's
LGBT
been a long time since Pride was any sort of a protest. I mean, it's a parade.
Not protest. I think it was a protest at one point.
Yeah, when
but
it
then
first
it's
started.
Coming to a Pride parade to show pride and solidarity with people and a place where you can be very open about sexuality when you might not always be able to be.
Hmm. But it's not just a protest, is it? It's just...
No, it's not a protest anymore. It's a parade now, but it's still a parade. You shouldn't have to pay £70. That's ridiculous. A lot of people won't have £70, and that doesn't make them not LGBT anymore.
No. But, I mean, I presume you don't have to. You can... I assume that the...
I think most of it is this Pride Live bit there.
No, that sounds to me like nonsense. It sounds to me like just people are kicking off just for the sake of kicking off, to be
really?
Honest.
Really? I
yes,
don't think so.
Yes, it sounds like typical Twitter to me, that. I mean, if you want to go and see Ariana Grande, fine. £70's about what it costs these days. I think it's too much to go and see Ariana Grande, but that's
and
what it costs.
Then on the other hand, do you think that it's okay that Ariana Grande, who is straight, is headlining it?
Yeah.
Don't you think it should be an LGBT person?
No, I don't see that at all. I don't see that.
No,
at
but
all.
I'm just saying, if it's going to be a Pride event about being proud to be LGBT, don't you think that it would send a better message if you had someone who was LGBT performing? I do think there is an exploitation of Pride by capitalist companies and big corporations. I think there's a real thing now, and it was making me think of this, of like capitalist companies and big corporations trying to act like they're your friends. If you've seen the
the bank,
I can't remember what bank it is.
Well, all of them.
Halifax or NatWest or no, a big bank HSBC maybe, and they've got these posters, and they've got them up for all the different cities, but the ones in Leeds, it's like, we are Leeds, we are salt of the earth, yeah. And ex cotton town, and it's like, stop trying to be my friend, you're not my friend, you're a bank. And I really, really hate it, and I don't like the idea that corporation like Coca-Cola would latch onto it. And then I saw this girl's, this, so this is kind of me ranting about,
this is you, yes,
how awful like the big corporations are and stuff, but I think it, the events like Pride really show how messed up the world is like that.
What do you think about actual products trying to be your friend? If you buy a couple of avocados from Marks and Spencer's, it says, keep me in the fridge.
Oh, like, what's it called? The animatization or something. What's the word?
God.
You know what I'm on about? The animation of it.
So with animals, you call it anthropomorphism.
Yeah, anthropomorphism, but it's not that.
It's not that with products.
With inanthropomorphism or something?
Oh, I don't know.
Anyway.
I have no idea. But whatever it is, does that annoy you?
That doesn't annoy me. What does annoy me is loyalty cards. I don't have any loyalty cards anymore because I saw this girl's, and she did like a video essay about it, and she was talking about loyalty cards, and you can't be loyal to a company. You shouldn't want to be loyal to a company. A company can't be loyal to you because loyalty is something that is between two people. And then she went on to speak about it and how it encourages people to spend money and stuff, which is something I already knew, and how.
But I suppose
in Boots, it's like a penny is like 1 pint is a penny, so like 40 pints. You're like, oh, I've got 40 pints, but it's actually only 40p and stuff. But what she, and I was like, well, that I already knew, I don't care. But what she said that was more like hit home was the idea that companies were trying to be people that you could feel things for, and like you shouldn't feel things for companies. You should just. They are companies and they're not your friends, and you can't be loyal to them, and you shouldn't have to be.
No. I mean, I think loyalty cards, I quite agree with you. Having said that, if I ever remember to hand my Cafe Nero card over in Cafe Nero, I mean, mostly I don't, but if I remember, I always get a little stamp on it, a little bit of buzz of enjoying it when you get your free coffee.
That's the thing, like, I've had free Subways from having a sub card, not like in the day, not recently.
You're not a submarine commander then?
When I used to go to Subways more. And then it's like, well, if I'm going to get one free, and I've been buying them anyway, but then there's a part of me thinks, well, maybe I wouldn't be going to Subway as often if I didn't have the card. Like, I don't think I choose to go there because I've got the card, but maybe subconsciously you do. Mm. But then also the word loyalty shouldn't refer to companies.
No.
And I don't like it.
But the thing is, it's capitalism. And it's making money. And we've decided, having read through all that Russian history, that probably capitalism is the least worst system.
Yeah, well, it's like Winston Churchill said, democracy is the worst kind of government, apart from all the others.
Well, as you've raised Pride, I thought we'd talk a little bit about this debate going on as far as the education system goes with how much information about LGBT ought to be shared with young children, very young children, between the ages of 3 and 7.
Yeah.
And you've been, with your theatre group, you did something called, was it Rainbow Stories?
A Rainbow of Stories.
A Rainbow of Stories. So tell me about
that. So the Leeds Library commissioned this like youth theatre ensemble, we're like aged 18 to 21 or whatever, and we're in like little theatre companies within the group, and we made pieces of work based on children's books that were about LGBT stories, obviously like changed them quite a lot, but based kind of on those.
Yeah.
And then,
so it's basically a princess marrying another princess.
That was my story. So it was like a little girl who was reading books, and she was sick of seeing the princess marry the prince, and then eventually in the end she like rewrites the story, so it's a princess marrying another princess, and that's essentially.
And who came to see this? Was it kids? Kids,
like 3 to 7 year old kids was what it was marketed for, and their parents.
And some of the other plays were like,
there was one about introducing Teddy, and that was about a teddy bear that wanted to be called Tilly instead of Thomas. And then the other one was called Rabbitiness, which was more just generally about a rabbit who's different and doesn't fit in with the other rabbits. Hmm. Yeah.
So what's your feeling about doing this in schools? Because I think the government...
I think it's great. With theatre and film and stuff, and this is not just for children but for everyone, I think it's important that LGBT characters are not always within LGBT stories. So Moonlight was about being gay, but I think there should be gay characters in things where the story is not about being gay.
Well, presumably, equality would... only happen when there's a gay character and there's not even any mention of the character being
no,
gay.
No, it would just
it wouldn't be a gay character, so you wouldn't know it was a gay character.
Well, no, you would if they had relationships. So Friends, for instance, if Ross was gay, the story wouldn't be about him coming out or him... You know, there's like loads of films, a bit of a trend for it at the moment, about gay conversion therapy, which is obviously important and those stories should be told.
Well, there's a guy in a school in Birmingham, apparently a very good head teacher, who is up for that big prize that they give you, £1 million prize best teacher in the world. But he's in all sorts of trouble with the religious community because 99% of the pupils in his school are Muslim.
And, gosh, that is a big percentage.
That is
for any religion, isn't it?
Yeah, 99% of pupils are Muslim. And there have been weeks of protests by parents calling for the school to stop teaching children, quotes, how to be gay.
Oh my God.
And demanding that he's sacked. And I just wonder what, you know, given that 99% of the pupils are Muslim...
I don't think it should make any difference.
After a difficult meeting, it says here, between parents and senior management on Friday, these are the parents of the kids in the school, small groups of parents will be invited to the school to discuss the programme. But I don't see that that's a circle that can be squared. I don't see how you can actually satisfy parents who, you know, who have this very deep
parents,
faith, which part of which says that you don't teach about LGBT.
Do you think it's wrong that they're teaching in it when the school's so predominantly Muslim?
Yeah, I think it probably is. I think
but then aren't we just teaching kids to be
well, it's not, at the end of the day, you know, the key influence is going to be home and the second influence is going to be school. So I don't see how the school should supersede what happens in the home. If you know, however stupid you or I might think it is, you know, whatever the religion is, if people have a deep faith in it, that's...
I think the kids can decide later on in life.
That's the whole point.
No, but I don't think they would if they're not... Like, you have to be given it in childhood, in early education, because if not, you don't... You're wrong.
I think that by the time these kids are like 15 or 16, they can make their own minds up. I don't see that it's a school's role.
So what if... Also, that I think it is important that if that one of those kids is gay, and obviously I don't really think you can know that when you're 3 to 7 years old, but if they are, and you give them an early childhood grounding of saying that these things are okay, then when you grow up and you get to 16 and you have all this home life and you might feel, you know, you wouldn't feel like you could be comfortable in coming out, then you've...
Well, the key thing is, what is the role of school? Is the role of school to be like social engineering, or is the role of school to be simply teaching? You know, teaching... I mean, this is a very, very good school. The teaching is very good.
And the thought that a school can be completely unbiased when teaching is just ridiculous. Do you know what I mean? Like, you're going to have... There's going to have to be some kind
of... What did you get? I mean, you went to a Catholic high school.
I didn't get...
Was there no sex education?
No, none at high school, because they don't have to do it. They don't have to teach it as a Catholic school. And then at primary school, we learn a bit. So you started with having, like, plants, and you'd learn about plants in year, like, 4 or something. Yeah. In year
so
5, you learn about, like, fish.
Of reproduction and things.
Yeah, and then in year 6, you learn about, like, you'd have, like, a little booklet with a man and a woman. And then you'd learn about, like, you'd see them, like, move into a house, just stupid stuff. And then about the... eggs and fallopian tubes and stuff, but never about relationships or anything.
I didn't
but
have any of that at high school.
Didn't
all.
Have a single thing.
Oh,
not,
right.
We learnt about a bit about relationships in RE, kind of, but only within... So we learnt about contraception, but only because you have to know what the Catholic Church's doctrine is on contraception. But I also think that it's really important to teach, maybe not kids when they're so young, but like at high schools, I think it should be sex and relationships, because I think that teaching about sex is important, but teaching about relationships and what healthy relationships look like and what is manipulative and what is consent and what's not is even more important.
We'll take a
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Short break. Should we have some music?
Yeah, okay then.
Should we start with yours?
Yeah, if you want.
And it's somebody called Oscar Jerome.
Oscar Jerome.
Let's have a listen.
Yeah, there's something hard, there's something, yeah, there's something that you stole from me. But what you stole from me, give up what you stole from me. I can't understand this great. How the selfish have the power, how the rest must plant the seed, for the trees must grow, for this concrete river to flow, yeah. We should stand up and say no, we should stand up and say no.
That's, to me, that is smooth jazz. That,
well, no, it is quite jazzy.
It's very jazzy.
It's got an influence of hip-hop, but it is pretty jazzy. He's performed at events that are like jazz nights and stuff, like jazz
festivals. Yeah, well, you can tell. Yeah. He's Oscar Jerome, and the song is called...
Give Back What You Stole From Me.
Give Back What You
Stole. Yeah, so he is one of the, like, UK jazz artists. People like Barney Artist and Jordan Rakai and stuff, he's, like, hip-hop with, like, a jazz influence. Mm. But then this guy is, like, fully jazz, pretty much. And he's, like, one of the, like, UK jazz scene people. And he's from South London.
Is he? Well, I could get on board with that because I used to play that stuff when I was on Jazz FM. It's not a million miles different from the stuff
I've just done. A little more I like
I've got some... Yeah, well, no, I'm not saying I don't like it. But it just... It surprised me, put it that way. It didn't seem very revolutionary.
No, it's not, but sometimes it's good for, like, having on the background if you're doing stuff as well.
Okay. This is Long Tall Sally by Little Richard.
Gonna tell Aunt Mary about Uncle John. He claimed he has a mystery, but he's having a lot of fun. Oh, baby. Yes, baby. Woo, baby. Having me some fun tonight. Yeah. Well, Long Tall Sally, she's a bit of a speech of God. Everything that Uncle John needs, oh,
You'll have heard that on several
movie
soundtracks, but you probably didn't know it was Little Richard.
You do this dance.
Yeah, you'll have heard it in, probably was in Dirty Dancing moves like that.
I don't know.
Anyways, it's classic rock and roll by...
Where did the roll go?
Yeah, they killed the roll in the middle of the night. It just became rock. But in those days, it was rock and roll. Little Richard, his real name, Richard Wayne Pennyman, born 1932, still with us at the age of 80, having lived a fairly... it's interesting, you know, some of these guys who... you know, blues artists and live on, they're a heck of a good advertisement for drinking, drugs, and generally carousing. But he's the sort of guy that should be on at Pride. He's the sort of, because he was flamboyant.
Oh, is he gay?
Oh, very, very gay.
Oh, I didn't know that.
But he had relationships with females as well, but he wasn't bisexual. He was mainly gay. And relationships
well, no, he would still be bisexual. Even if you usually go for people from same sex. Dad, have you not seen the Kinsey scale?
Let me read you this then, and you can tell me where he's on the Kinsey scale. Penniman first got involved in voyeurism in his early 20s when a female friend would drive him around and pick up men who would allow him to watch them have sex in the back seat of cars. Penniman's activity caught the attention of Macon police, and that's Macon, Georgia. I went to Macon, Georgia.
Oh,
there's a statue of Otis Redding there. Also, the Allman Brothers come from Macon, Georgia. Anyway, Penniman's activity caught the attention of Macon police. He was arrested after a gas station attendant in Macon reported sexual activity in a car Penniman was occupying with a heterosexual couple. And that was an incident in 1955 when he spent a certain time. But there were lots of other lots of behaviour that's away from the norm, but I think ultimately he was gay. But very influential musically, hugely, hugely influential. An influential figure in popular music and culture for 7 decades, Wikipedia says. His most celebrated work dates from the mid-50s, as that did. And Long Tall Sally, you'll know, was recorded by the Beatles on one of their first EPs. They were very influenced by Little Richard. Now, here's something I've sort of picked up from you, and I read a review of a book called Invisible Women, Exposing Data Bias in a World Designed for Men.
That's what I always say, world designed for men.
Yes, well, and it turns out you're absolutely right.
Turns out, as if we needed a study to be done.
Well, it's a book that's written
I'm kidding, I don't always think I'm right.
It's a book that's been written by somebody called Caroline Criado Perez, and she's the woman who campaigned to get Jane Austen onto British banknotes.
Yes, I've heard of this book, actually.
Have you heard of the book,
yeah.
Invisible Women?
Only because I've heard of her for the Jane Austen thing.
I'll read you the first bit, because this is quite interesting. You'd be able to tell if your mother or your wife or your sister was having a heart attack, wouldn't you? They'd have chest and left arm pains, maybe clutch their breast. Except they wouldn't. None of that would happen. These are male symptoms of a heart attack, what she calls a Hollywood heart attack. So when somebody has a heart attack in a movie.
Yeah.
It's that sort of thing. But she says women, by comparison, tend to experience stomach pain, breathlessness, nausea, and fatigue.
No way. Oh my gosh, that's madness.
That's why they are up to 60% more likely to be misdiagnosed, which can lead to a preventable death. That's because the whole concept of the heart attack was designed by men for male orientated movies, which is interesting. And she cites all sorts of other things that are designed for men. For instance, Viagra, which of course is a male drug, but it's called sildenafil citrate is the actual chemical name of it, and it was initially being tested as a heart medication, but then the well-known properties to aid men were discovered. Hallelujah, said Big Pharma, and research ceased because obviously highly marketable. In subsequent tests, the same drug was found to offer total relief for serious period pain over 4 hours.
Yeah.
This didn't impress the review panel, who decided that it was just a drug for that purpose. I would normally not have read about this, except you sort of switched me on to the fact there's a lot of stuff
there's a lot of just small stuff. So, obviously there's major problems and there's major things that, feminism is for, and, female genital mutilation and stuff that's really terrible. But there's a lot of stuff in the world that is just terrible for women because the world was built by men for men, and that is the world we live in. And then it frustrates me when people say that because we've got a female prime minister, oh, women must be equal. Yeah. But there's a lot of small things. Or, you can even look at the birth control pill. There's barely been any research into it because it serves men. That's one of the main reasons. I'm not saying that's the only reason, but there's barely been any research into it because it's a good thing for men that women take the birth control pill. And it's like really dangerous to be on it for a prolonged period of time, but women still do it. That's just coming out now.
No,
but there's still not.
It's not.
It is a bit.
It's been known for a long time.
So I would say, why,
for at least 30 years, it has been known that to take it for a long period of time, it can be dangerous.
But,
that's been known for years.
So that's, sorry. What I meant was only now are women starting to be really, really outraged about it. And a lot of women are saying, I'm not going to put hormones into my body anymore because it's bad for
I think the outrage might, the outrage might and, be new, but the actual knowledge
No, the actual knowledge
new.
Is it. So, but if something came out that was like men are poisoning themselves on purpose, people would not go on it anymore, or at least not for prolonged periods of time.
No.
If it was about men, I think. So, but women will actively poison themselves.
Well, they're not actively poisoning themselves.
In a way.
There are lots of women.
I might be, okay, I think I'm exaggerating.
Yes, I think you are very much exaggerating.
But it's been proved that it causes blood clots.
Yeah, there are all sorts of things, you know, aspirins, there are all sorts of things that in excess will cause...
No, not in excess, though.
Well, over a long period of time, that is in excess.
No, over like... Anything over like 4 years or something, not like ridiculous amounts of time or anything. The amount of time that most women stay on it.
I think you'll find that the birth control pill was quite liberating for
yeah,
women
no, it
as well.
Was, it was.
Yeah.
But
I mean, you've seen enough.
Surely we can. Surely we've reached a point.
You've seen enough. Call the midwives.
Yeah,
about
I know. But surely we've reached a point that women aren't required to potentially put their lives at risk.
No, and I don't
to
think
to be liberated.
Absolutely shouldn't, and I don't think they would. You know, I think these women's health issues are really quite well known now.
They are well known, but so why are so many? There's still not been that much research into the birth control pill, especially not for what it does for your mental health either.
I think there's been lots and lots of research
into what it does for like blood
pill.
I don't think there's been that much research into it. I don't know the actual figures, but I
If you look at medical evidence, you can't. You're never that definite about side effects of things, especially when it comes to mental health. That could be, you know.
Yeah, I know because it's
avocados could affect your mental health.
No, because it's impossible. That's why I'm saying that there can't be that much research onto what the birth control pill does for your mental health, because so many it's based on so many other factors that you can't get a proper reading on it. But.
And that's the trouble with medical information, or you know, with a lot of the information, especially stuff, headline stuff that you read in newspapers. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You could do a survey on what I said about avocados, right? The increase recently in people eating avocados. I know people have stopped a bit now because the woke people don't like, you know, avocados are quite costly.
They're terrible for the environment.
Quite costly for the environment. But let's go back 2 years when every hipster cafe was serving avocados on toast and every hipster was eating avocado on toast, right?
Yeah.
So you could do some research saying, right, the consumption of avocados has gone up 92%. And then you do some more research and find out, you know, why are people so depressed? Why is there so much depression these days? Why are there so many mental health problems? And say, that's gone up 92%. Therefore, avocados lead to depression and mental health problems.
Yeah, but I still don't think there's been enough research into the birth control pill.
You have got me interested, though, in reading about feminism and feminist columns. I'm reading them all the time now. And thank you for that. This is one with... It's an interview with the author and the founder of Everyday Sexism. She was interviewed by somebody called Decca Aitkenhead, who's a very, very good interviewer, works in the on the Sunday Times. And she says there's a subgenre of sexism... this woman, Laura Bates, encounters again and again when she visits schools to talk to teenagers. She's everyday sexism. She gives talks to teenagers, which is excellent. It makes no difference if the school is private or state co-ed or single sex in the South or the North, everywhere. Everywhere she goes, she says boys say the same things. And I didn't really think boys said these things, and you'll have to tell me if you've heard any boys say any of these things.
Mm-hmm.
Rape is a compliment, really, they tell her. It's not rape if she enjoys it. It's normal for girls to cry during sex. These are all in quotes here. A girl has to have sex with you if you're her boyfriend. And why does Bates even bother talking about consent and assault, they demand, when everyone knows so many women lie about it? Now, I'm just...
There's a definite trend of boys thinking that sex is, that girls lie about being raped. That's 110%. And I think that this is a certain type of boy as well. And I don't think every boy would say that. And especially, so the one about, like, a girl has to have sex with you if you're her boyfriend, that's a very particular type of boy. And,
right. And you can,
I don't think loads of people would say that.
Can you steer clear of those sort of boys?
Yeah, but the second one, what was that one?
It's not rape if she enjoys it.
I think that people say that.
Do they really?
Yeah, maybe as a joke, but I think that usually if you say something as a joke, you think it.
See, I thought all these attitudes have moved on a bit. I mean, that sort of thing would have been said when
not
I was
loads.
At school.
I just think that there's always going to be... So, like, there was a backlash against feminism in the 1980s when people became really, like, traditional and really in their Christian values and stuff. And I think that because women are... not just women, but men as well, are starting to stand up for sexual assault and there's been the whole Me Too movement, there's always going to be a backlash against whatever it is. So I think it's probably that a bit. I don't know, and it may be a thing of, like, subconsciously men feel a tide changing in power balances. Mm. But I think what is, again...
Do you think it's because of pornography? Do you think a lot of... Because the one thing that's different now than from when I was at school is the availability of online porn.
Kathleen Moran called it, like, a world of rampant online pornography or something.
So would you say most of the boys that you encounter at school will be watching pornography?
Oh, my God, yeah, of course. From the age of, like, 13 or 14, 12, 13, 14-ish.
Yeah.
And
what about the girls? The girls watch pornography?
No. Well, at least they don't talk about it.
Yeah.
Not really. Because also, I think porn is made for men, and it gives men unrealistic standards of what women... for what women look like, but then that's the same thing with models and stuff. Like, if boys are always looking at models and then they call girls fat, like, no wonder that girls have such body dysmorphia problems.
Yes, I think models and catwalk, you know, if you're talking about catwalk models, I think it's mostly women that look at
women look at other women, yeah. But there is a pressure of, like, men look at women less like fashion models, but more like girls like Megan Fox. Yeah, glamour, like...
Page 3 itself doesn't exist anymore.
But have you seen the actual page 3 of The Sun? Because it's pretty much the same thing.
It's,
like, how have they managed to get away with that?
Well, they're slightly covered, aren't they?
They're just, like, on their back or something. But yeah, what I think is that...
I'm going to do a little test with you now, Ruth, to see how stupid you are. There's a book out called The Intelligence Trap, Why Smart People Do Stupid Things, and How to Make Wiser Decisions. So basically, even though you're smart and you've got a lot of what the what country music stars in America used to call book learning, you've got a lot of book learning in you. You've got a lot of book learning in you, but you may be stupid, despite having all that book learning. So, let me ask you these questions. It's a book called The Intelligence Trap, and they have I'll ask you a few selected ones. The wind blows west, right?
Yeah.
The wind blows west. An electric train runs east. In which direction does the smoke from the locomotive blow?
There's no smoke because it's an electric train.
Brilliant, brilliant. Have you been asked that before?
I don't think so. I think that... I was looking out for...
You're looking out for traps, yeah.
I love questions like this, though.
Oh, good. Yeah. Well, here's another one, then. If you were running a race and you passed the person in second place, what place would you be in now?
Second.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. This is distressing, as I thought you might have been. If you have only one
match... I've heard that one before.
Have you? If you have only one match and you walk into a dark room where there's an oil lamp, a newspaper and wood... which thing would you light first?
Wait, hold on a second.
Can I just repeat the question?
Yeah.
If you have only one match and you walk into a dark room where there's an oil lamp, a newspaper and wood, which thing would you light first?
Do I have something to light the match with?
I think you've got the answer. The answer is the match.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I would light the match. I wouldn't light... Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so you did actually better than your sister, who is the sports correspondent of Sky News, who, when I said that, immediately said, oh, the oil lamp. Well, there you go. A farmer had 15 sheep and all but 8 died. How many are left?
Wait, the farmer had 15 sheep. And all but eight. Oh, eight.
Yeah.
That one was not that bad. That was
Emily's father has three daughters. The first two are named April and May. What's the third?
This is one of those ones they do all the time, Emily.
Yeah. Too easy. Well, there are, but I've not.
Yeah, go on.
I've not got the book. No, I haven't got them here. I haven't got them here.
Oh, do you want me to do you a riddle?
No, I don't.
No,
I'm terrible at that sort of thing.
No, it's a good riddle.
I am for whom this book is made. The intelligence trap where smart people do stupid things.
It's because I'm not that smart.
I'm the king of doing stupid things.
I can't believe you don't want my riddle.
Oh, go on then.
Yeah. Okay, so this is just a riddle. This is not one of those, like, one-word things. Mm. So you walk into a room and there's three doors. No, there's two doors and two men in front of the doors.
Right. Have I gone into the room yet?
So you're in a room. You're in a room. It's just like a black box. You're in the room. Mm. There's no... and there's two men in there. Mm. Or women, whatever. Two men and two doors behind them. Mm. And they both are, like, guarding one of the doors. And one of the doors leads to instant death. And the other door leads to the outside world and your life and everything else. Now, you've got one of the men always tells the truth and the other man always lies. You've got one question to ask them to find out which door you should walk through, but you've only got one question.
I've heard this
before.
So
what would you ask?
You ask one bloke if
you've only got one question.
Yeah, but you say to the one guy, you say, mm-hmm. if I was to ask the other guy if that's the door to go through, what would he say? Something like that. What's the correct answer?
What door would the other man tell me to walk through?
Right.
And then you pick the opposite door.
Yeah, I couldn't remember. I'd remember the question right, that's the right question, and then go through the wrong door. But that's because I have no sense of direction whatsoever. I will always leave a building.
Left, and then you'd just walk out the wrong.
Right. It's true. I always go the wrong way.
You do that.
Now, I gather we have no Kardashian news this week.
No, just that. You know the whole Khloe, Tristan, Jordan thing?
Yeah, I do.
So Khloe Kardashian has unfollowed Jordan on Instagram, but she has not yet unfollowed Tristan.
I did get a tweet from somebody saying, could you keep it light this week? I'm still broken up over the Khloe song. So we've got... Oh, did we get a couple of other emails? If you do want to email us, there is an address, isn't there, Ruth?
There is. It's martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com. And while you're on your computer, maybe check out the Spotify playlist. That was smooth, that wasn't it?
Very smooth. Very smooth.
You can either type Ruthie, me and my dad, or Martin and Ruth, and either will get you through to the playlist.
I've got an interesting email from James Blacklock. I'm indebted to you, Ruth, because I found what's happened is people have been listening...
For what reason?
I'll tell you what reason. People have been listening to the podcast, and because they hear me on the podcast, and occasionally I mention talk radio where I do the prime time overnight show at the weekend.
1 till 5 a.m.
Yeah, 1 till 5 a.m. People have tuned in to talk radio after listening to the podcast.
Mm.
Because it's my ambition to get into double figures by the end of the year. And we've got another one here, James Blacklock. He said he's just bought a DAB radio, and he heard me on because I got a DAB radio, was able to listen to talk radio, and he exclaimed, "Blimey, Martin Kellner, is he still with us?" And he said, "You were exchanging."
You're like Betty White. How is she still alive?
Yeah, who knows? But basically, what it was I played clips of this podcast on the show on Talk Radio.
Mm-hmm.
So the lucky people who are listening to me on Talk Radio and this can hear it twice.
Wow.
He says, you were exchanging observations with what sounded like a teenage girl. Her perky northern accent and apparent ease in your company quickly had me leaping to... That's all an illusion. Had me leaping to the conclusion that she was almost certainly your youngest daughter. And the point about the last time he heard you, you were 4 years old on my late night show. He said...
completely inappropriately.
Yeah, he said, the last time I heard you chatting with Ruthie produced one of my all-time top 10 best live radio moments. If I recall correctly, it was late on New Year's Eve. Rather than attend some wild party, my girlfriend at the time preferred the pleasure of a late-night champagne supper in her flat, with your show providing the soundtrack so they would listen to it. on New Year's Eve. Your wife and two of your daughters had apparently been out for a meal and called in at the studio on the way home. But it was only your youngest who made a live on-air contribution to the show. I think she was 4 years old. And apparently, I don't remember this, but he says that you were told you had to go home. You'd done some broadcasting and then told that you had to go home by your mum, that you were all going home this New Year's Eve, and you started crying, he says. I can't believe that. I don't think you would have done that. But he says, I loved it. Anyway, he says he's going to tune into the show again.
Yeah, I always meet people and they're expecting me to be seven, maybe.
Yeah, well, people do think, remember you from when you did do.
People always think that they age and no one around them ages, which is funny.
That is funny. Andrew Mannion.
Funny weird, not funny, haha.
Yes. Andrew, anyway, he's going to listen again, so bless him. That's James in Cheshire. Andrew Mannion says, I agree with Ruth's point regarding the onslaught of propaganda on social media. Not just related to politics, though. We were talking about politics, I think, and Brexit, possibly, last week. He says, but virtually any topic you care to name. People are immersing themselves with information and viewpoints which solely reinforce their view.
Yeah, that's the problem. Yeah,
he says, on virtually anything, breastfeeding, veganism.
Because you just marketed the things that you already believe in. So you just keep hearing the same things and you never open up to any other points of view, which is sad.
Yeah, and he says pineapple on pizza. People also have a view on that. Pineapple on pizza, what's your view?
Pineapple does go on pizza.
Yeah, you used to like that, didn't you?
I really like it, but I don't eat ham, so I have to ask for just pineapple, which feels weird.
So, Ruth, have you got a meme of the week for us?
I do. So, me being kidnapped. Me. Will I need my toothbrush? Kidnapper. Sherp. Me. I assume that means you're providing the toothbrush.
That's very good. That's
yeah,
very good.
It's funny. Kind of funny.
Yes.
It's good, though, because you start with a jerk and I end with a jerk.
It is good.
Bookended.
Very much bookended by two jokes. If you do want to get in touch with us, it's martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com. That's martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com.
And the Spotify playlist, you can either type in Martin and Ruth or Ruthie, me and my dad, and either one of those will get you to the playlist with this week's songs and all the others.
And thank you ever so much for listening.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.